I want us to focus on that phrase in Acts chapter 17 and in verse 6, where the Jews were accusing them of turning the world upside down. And that's what I want to talk about this morning. There's a lot of turmoil in the world right now, and so we're seeing, not just in this country, but we're kind of seeing it across the globe, there's protests and violence and riots and so on and so forth, and we might even use the phrase to describe those who are leading or participating in such a thing as turning the world upside down. In other words, they're taking what we're used to in the world, and they're kind of turning it on its side. They're making things uncomfortable, they're making things violent, depending on who you're looking at, but so on and so forth. They're turning the world upside down. And so, at least in this context, we mean that it's causing turmoil and unrest and frustration and anger. And it might even mean, in some cases, that some are attempting to enact positive change. But overall, as we observe the things that are going on, we probably view the bulk of it in a negative connotation. And so, as we come to our text in Acts chapter 17, this is what the Jews are accusing Paul and Silas and those that were with them. That's what they're accusing them of. When they say they're turning the world upside down, they're not looking at that as a positive thing. They're accusing them of saying, we're taking the good things that we have. We got a good thing going on. You know, the Jews kind of held reign over what was going on in their part of the Roman Empire. And here comes Paul and Silas, and they're trying to flip that on its head. And so they're going to drag them before the Romans, you know, they're going to drag them before those who they really don't like and say, we got to do something about this because they're turning the world upside down. But if we look at what they were actually accomplishing, it's not really a negative thing at all, is it? They were doing what they were supposed to be doing, and we're going to look at that some this morning. The Jews, as I said, did not mean something good with their use of the phrase. They were using this as an accusation, something to try to get Paul and Silas and the others in trouble. In fact, they probably were hoping it would lead to their deaths at some point. And so, they do things like, in verse 7, Jason has harbored them, and these are all acting contrary to the decrees of Caesar, saying there is another king, Jesus. So they invoke the name of Caesar as trying to get Paul and Silas in trouble. Now, think about this for a minute. Do they really have respect for Caesar? Do the Jews really care that Caesar calls himself their king? No, in fact, the Jews at this time are a subjected people, and they hate the Romans for taking over their lands and taking any power from them and for putting them in subjection to them. So the fact that they are willing to talk about Caesar and say, well, they're teaching things that are contrary to Caesar. They're calling themselves, you know, they're saying there's another king besides Caesar. Well, that might get the attention of the Romans, and it might get the Romans to say, now wait a minute, what are they trying to pull here, saying there's another king? But don't be fooled. The Jews are just using this as a desperation measure because they don't care about Caesar. So they showed their desperation to silence the gospel, that they were willing to make an uneasy alliance with the Romans in this instance. And so the real point of what they're trying to accomplish here, and we'll look at a couple other examples as well, Paul and Silas and the apostles and the other Christians carrying the gospel across the world, they really were turning the world upside down. And as I said, they're taking what the Jews had, like I said, they thought they had a good thing going, and they're taking it and they're turning it on its side. They're upsetting the apple cart, you might say. They're upsetting the status quo. They're bringing something different to the table. And they're telling the Jews, they're teaching the Jews that what they thought they knew and what the Jewish leaders were teaching them was not accurate. Because here they come and they're teaching about the Messiah, and the Jews knew about the Messiah from prophecy, but they had denied that Jesus was the one that was coming to be the Messiah. And so here's Paul and Silas and the other Christians saying, the Messiah that you read about in prophecy, this is him. This is who you're supposed to be following. And so the Jews were angry because Christianity was threatening their power. In Matthew chapter 21 and in verse 42 and 43, we read about Jesus talking about the fact that the gospel came to the Jews first, and they had rejected him. And so Jesus says it's going to be carried on to others now. The Jews had the first opportunity. They had the first crack at listening and obeying the gospel. And by and large, they had rejected it. So this new religion threatened to displace them as the leading religion among the Jewish people. And so, of course, that threatens their power. And if you recall back when we worked through the book of Luke, we talked a lot about that. A lot of the things that they tried to do to get Jesus to stop teaching about himself, to get his followers to stop teaching about him, because it was threatening their power among the people. The Romans perhaps were less concerned at first. After all, the Jews were a relatively minor subset of all of the peoples they had conquered and all of the people that were in subjection to them. And so, you know, maybe this little subset of people is causing a little bit of noise over here in the empire. But overall, they're probably not overly concerned with them at first. We do know that this changes later. We have various Roman emperors, as we learn from history, they work to eradicate Christianity through severe persecution. But the overarching theme that, of what we read is that the spreading of the gospel literally changed the world. And it continues to do so. And so let's look for a few minutes at first century Christians turning the world upside down. And actually, it started with Jesus himself. As we study his life and his death, we see the dramatic impact that he had and continues to have on the world. Now for thousands of years, he disrupted the way things were. Following the, you know, we have what we sometimes call the period of silence between the Testaments. God didn't have a whole lot to say to the people during that time. And religion kind of maybe fell into what you might call a rut. And so God's not saying anything to the people, and the Jews just continue to veer off further and further from doing what God had instructed them to do. And we know by the time we start reading about the Jews in the New Testament, they had kind of changed everything about what they were supposed to do. And so we see them kind of practicing Judaism in their own way. And that's a lot of what Jesus battled whenever he was here and teaching among the people. He was challenging the fact that they had started coming up with their own rules and regulations and so forth. And so we even see things like they had more than one high priest. Well, we don't read that in the Old Testament law, but they had come up with their own ways of doing things. And so now Jesus comes and he challenges the way that things were. And so he comes along and he flips Judaism on its side, and then he instructs his followers, after his death, his followers receive the instruction, you take this message that I bring and you take it to the whole world. And we know from the story of Jesus that, similar to the situation with Paul and Silas, the Jews were willing to play whatever card they needed to go after Jesus. And so we read as we look at the different gospel accounts of the trial and crucifixion of Jesus, just like they did with Paul and Silas, they tried to invoke Caesar in that instance as well. Well, here's this Jesus, and he's proclaiming himself a king, and we already have a king. We already have Caesar the king. In Luke chapter 23, and this is one of those instances, and it's not the only one. Luke chapter 23, beginning in verse 1, then the whole multitude of them arose and led him to Pilate, and they began to accuse him, saying, we found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ, a king. Number one, Jesus never told them not to pay taxes. They just made this up out of thin air. Jesus, in fact, instructed them to do what they were supposed to do and to give honor to whom honor was due, including Caesar and paying their taxes. But, you know, as we know from throughout the kangaroo court they put Jesus through, they're willing to make up whatever they need to get Jesus in trouble. And so this was their early attempts at trying to stop the spread of the gospel. But as we know, as we read throughout the New Testament, they were unable to stop either Jesus or the apostles or the other Christians from spreading the gospel. As I mentioned a few moments ago, after Jesus' death, the apostles were tasked with taking the gospel to the world. In Mark chapter 16, Mark chapter 16 and verse 15. And he said to them, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He who believes and is baptized will be saved, but he who does not believe will be condemned. Now these are short verses, and they're verses that we're all familiar with, but this was a incredible change to the way things had been. He's going to, with these words and these instructions to the apostles and the work that he expects them to go do, it's going to change religion forever. From this point on, religion is going to be completely different than what the world had known up to this point. The Jews, again, tried to stop this spread of the gospel. In Acts chapter 8, and beginning in verse 1, now Saul was consenting to his death, speaking of Stephen. At that time, a great persecution arose against the church, which was at Jerusalem, and they were all scattered throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria, except the apostles. And devout men carried Stephen to his burial and made great lamentation over him. As for Saul, he made havoc of the church, entering every house and dragging off men and women, committing them to prison. So here was their attempt to stop this new gospel that was being spread, this teaching about Jesus. Here's Saul, one of their leading men. They give him this permission to go and to do what he can to eradicate this Christianity, to eliminate this word about Jesus, because they denied that he was the Messiah, denied that this was the salvation that God had prophesied he would send. And so he goes into all of these houses and to try to disturb this spreading of the gospel, to bring fear into the hearts of those who were obeying the gospel, dragging them off to prison, and as we saw with Stephen, even consenting to death of Christians. So I'm sure the Jews' idea was, well, this is certainly going to stop this. This is certainly going to convince them to stop talking about this gospel. What do we read in verse 4 of Acts chapter 8? Therefore, those who were scattered went everywhere preaching the word. It absolutely backfired on them. This was intended, spreading this fear was intended to stop them, and all they did was get the message spread in more places, to take it even further. A little bit later in Acts chapter 4, in Acts chapter 4, we have some more examples of the Jews attempting to stop the gospel. Acts chapter 4, and beginning in verse 13, now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John, and perceived that they were uneducated and untrained men, they marveled, and they realized that they had been with Jesus. And seeing the man who had been healed standing with them, they could say nothing against it. But when they commanded them to go aside out of the council, they conferred among themselves, saying, what shall we do to these men? For indeed that a notable miracle has been done through them is evident to all who dwell in Jerusalem, and we cannot deny it. But so that it spreads no further among the people, let us severely threaten them, that from now on they speak to no man in this name. And again, look at their desperation. They can't deny that they had performed a miracle. They can't deny that they had the ability to heal this man. They know the people had observed this, and they can't with any integrity stand in front of the people and say, well, this miracle that you thought you saw didn't really happen. But at the same time, they're not willing to concede that maybe they should pay attention to what's being taught. Maybe they should consider what's being said, that maybe they were wrong, and maybe they were bringing word from the Messiah. They're not going to consider that. So we're just going to, in verse 17, but so that it spreads no further among the people, let us severely threaten them, that from now on they speak to no man in this name. So they called them and commanded them not to speak at all, nor teach in the name of Jesus. But Peter and John answered and said to them, whether it is right in the sight of God to listen to you more than to God, you judge. For we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard. So here was another attempt. We're going to severely threaten you. You are no longer allowed to teach in this name. And Peter and John, Okay, well, we'll go and be quiet now. Their answer is, we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard. And it reminds me of Jeremiah. You know, I'll be quiet. I'll be quiet. And he said it burned within him. And he says, I can't be quiet. I have to teach. I have to say what the Lord wants me to say. And that's the same attitude I see from Peter and John here, saying, you can threaten us all you want, but we have this message that needs to get to the people. This is what Jesus himself wanted us to spread to the people. And so we have no choice but to go and do what he said. We can't keep it to ourselves. We must be able to share it. In Acts chapter 5, we see a follow-up to this. Acts chapter 5, and beginning in verse 22. But when the officers came and did not find them in prison, they returned and reported, saying, indeed, we found the prison shut securely, and the guards standing outside before the doors. But when we opened them, we found no one inside. Now when the high priest, the captain of the temple, and the chief priests heard these things, they wondered what the outcome would be. So one came and told them, saying, look, the men whom you put in prison are standing in the temple and teaching the people. So here we see they've severely threatened them. Now they've put them in prison, and they've all with the instruction to stop teaching in Jesus' name. And where do they find them? They're back in the temple, and they're back teaching again. Verse 26, then the captain went with the officers and brought them without violence, for they feared the people, lest they should be stoned. And again we see it's popular among the people. The people like what they're hearing. The people are responding to what they're hearing. And so the Jews don't want to turn the people on themselves, so that, you know, they want to bring them kind of under the table, bring them quietly back. And then they want to bring these threats to them. Verse 27, and when they had brought them, they set them before the council. And the high priest asked them, saying, did we not strictly command you not to teach in this name? And look, you have filled Jerusalem with your doctrine and intend to bring this man's blood on us. Does anybody remember back at the crucifixion? And the Jews said, his blood be on us and on our children. They were happy to have that assigned to them then. And now, when the apostles are out teaching and they're saying, his blood is on you. Wait a minute. What do you mean his blood's on us? Well, we told you back at his crucifixion this is what was going to happen, and you were happy to have it then, and now they don't like being told you are guilty of the blood of Jesus. Verse 29, but Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men. This is their answer again. They've already told them this once. They've already told them we have to teach the things that we have been told. Now he says, even though you told us we're not allowed to teach in this name, it's more important to listen to what God has to say. It's more important to listen to his commandments than yours. And he goes on. Do you notice what Peter does? He goes on and again assigns blame to them for murdering the Son of God. So he's already in trouble. He's already been in prison. He's already been severely threatened. He's dragged before the council again, and his response is, you're guilty of this. Their objective, the Jews, speaking of the Jews, their objective was to stop the spread of this gospel. And instead, they only amplified it. In several passages, just like the one we just read, we read where they were letting the Jews know, this is the Messiah, and you took his life. So we see that in various places in Acts 2 and Acts 5 and Acts 4. They had rejected Jesus, and God had opened up salvation to everyone, and the Jews didn't like it. But it was indeed turning the world upside down. Now consider for a few moments that it cost them something to pursue this. Jesus, of course, cost him his life. Even though that was God's plan from the beginning, it didn't change the fact that as a human, he had to endure those things, the suffering and the beatings and the and then, of course, being crucified. As a human, he obviously felt that pain and anguish that it caused him. It cost him something for this message to be heard. And then we've already read these other passages concerning Peter and the other apostles, and we looked at what it cost them, imprisonment and beatings and so forth. Now let's look at Paul. Now, the last that we talked about Paul here, he was still known as Saul, and he was helping, trying to stop the spread of the gospel. But after Jesus Christ himself, I think it's pretty easy to see that the Apostle Paul had the most significant impact on the early church. In 2 Corinthians chapter 11, Paul is going to talk about just a little bit of the things that serving Jesus cost him. And remember, he was one of the most prominent Jews. And so when he turned his back on them, he had a target on his back from then on. And so a lot of these things that he suffered is because he had been one of them. He had been one of those who thought the gospel should be stopped, and now he was the one foremost in spreading it. And so the Jews had an intense hatred for him, and he had a target on his back. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, and beginning in verse 22, Paul writes, "Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool, I am more. And labors more abundant, and stripes above measure, and prisons more frequently, and deaths often. From the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I have been in the deep. And journeys often, and perils of waters, and perils of robbers, and perils of my own countrymen, and perils of the Gentiles, and perils in the city, and perils in the wilderness, and perils in the sea, and perils among false brethren, and weariness, and toil, and sleeplessness often, and hunger and thirst, and fastings often, and cold and nakedness, besides the other things, what comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches." He talks about all these different things that he suffered. And why was he suffering these things? After all, if he'd have stayed as one of the leading Jews, is he going to suffer all of these things? He's going to be highly elevated among them. His life certainly would have been, you know, his physical life here certainly would have been easier had he renounced following Christ. But would his death have been easier? What did his suffering accomplish? Well, among many other things, it led to the gospel making it all the way to Rome. We don't know for sure who all he had the opportunity to teach there, but as we read about his time in prison in Rome, we know that he had a lot of influence and a lot of ability to teach from there. So his suffering led to the ability to assist in taking the gospel all across the known world at the time. And we've been studying in Dad's class on Wednesday evenings about all of Paul's different journeys and the various men who at different times assisted him, and how many different places they went and how far and wide they worked to spread the gospel. And so we read all of these things and many other examples in the New Testament, and we see how they turned the world upside down. They turned religion on its head. They pushed Judaism aside. They showed the world that there was something new and something better that God wanted us to know. But that's what they did. Let's talk for a few minutes about what we're doing. Ask ourselves, what am I doing to help spread the gospel and turn the world? What are you doing? Are we being busy about the work of the kingdom? Are we looking for doors of opportunity to teach others about the hope that lies within us? Are we demonstrating a willingness to pay a price to serve Him? Or do we make excuses? And like I, the last time I gave this lesson down in Wellsburg, I had the same thing to say. I want it to be for all of us, but I'm talking to myself here. Because I know there are times that I've had the opportunity to talk to someone about the gospel, and I've let that opportunity pass by. So do we make excuses whenever an opportunity presents itself? Well, I don't know anyone. I don't know that many people. I don't like confrontation. I don't like confrontation. Sometimes in my job, I have to deal with difficult customers, and I'm always uncomfortable in those situations. Well, you start talking to someone about the gospel, and by necessity, it's eventually going to lead to a conversation about you shouldn't be doing this in your life. A lot of times that means there's going to be a confrontation. And I don't like confrontation. But we have to be able to look past that, because we need to care more about their soul than we do about our own discomfort. Or I'm too shy. And you may or may not believe it, but I used to be really shy. Some of you probably remember that, have known me for a long time. I used to be really shy. I had to learn to get over that. Or I live in too small a place. There's not that many people where I live. There's not that many people to talk to. Or, and this is a big one in our society, I'm just too busy. I've got too many other things going on to stop and to talk to someone about the gospel. And so on and so forth. And each and every one of us can look into our own lives and say, perhaps I've used this or that as an excuse for why I'm not being busy about the work of the kingdom. The gospel continues to turn the world upside down. So we need to ask ourselves, are we doing our part? We looked at those who placed great value on the gospel, and they were willing to give up everything for it. And so we've studied in times past. We look at Jesus calling the apostles and what they gave up. Some gave up their businesses and their livelihoods. Someone gave up their places to live. We read examples where those gave up their families and their friends in order to follow Jesus. And yes, many even their own lives. Starting with Jesus himself and looking at many of the apostles gave their lives in service to the gospel. They placed a great value on the gospel. So what value do we place on it? If we can't be bothered, if a little ridicule silences us. And that's a big one. In our society, it's becoming more and more trendy to talk bad about religion. Religion has always had a target on it. But the more godless our society becomes, the more trendy it is to make fun of anyone who supposes to talk about Jesus Christ. And so if a little ridicule gets us to stop talking about him, well, we certainly haven't followed the example of Peter and John, because they were heavily ridiculed. They were heavily told, be quiet, stop talking about Jesus. And their answer was, we can't be quiet. In Luke chapter 16, in Luke chapter 16 and in verse 10, we have the words of Jesus here. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. And what is Jesus saying here? If you can't be counted on to be faithful in the little things, can I count on you whenever the big things come? The answer is no. If someone makes a little fun of you to get you to be quiet about the gospel, if persecution comes, do you think you're going to be faithful at that time? According to the words of Jesus here, most likely not. We have to demonstrate our willingness to be faithful in the little things for him to know that he can count on us if the going gets tough. As we close our lesson this morning, I want us to think about the fact there's a lot of stuff going on in the world. And that's what I talked about at the beginning. And I even talked a little bit about it on Wednesday night. There's not a lot that we can do about what's going to happen in the political world or even in society at large as far as influencing things to go the way that we would like them to go. And we talked a little bit about our particular form of government allows us to have some say in that, but there's a lot of Christians that live in forms of government where they have no say over what's going to happen in their government. But we have a responsibility, regardless of where we live and under who we serve, it doesn't matter who wins this election coming up. Christians have the same responsibility. We still have the same opportunity to say, the gospel continues to change hearts. It continues to change the world, turn the world upside down, if you will. Are we going to be on board with doing our part of it, or are we going to let the opportunities pass us by? I hope these have been some encouraging things for us to think about this morning. I appreciate your kind attention. I hope you'll take these things with you and consider them, as I've been trying to do, being sure that I'm doing my part in the kingdom. If anyone has any need to respond to the invitation, let those things be made known as we stand and sing.